All right, I'm giving this thing a go. We'll see how it works out. It's the news, according to me. Well, good day, everyone. It is Tuesday, Technical Tuesday here at the News According to Me. It's July 7th, 3:55 p.m. Central Standard Time. It is a little bit late Eastern Standard Time, but it's I'm in Birmingham, Alabama, not too far from Selma, actually. But I'm here, and that's all I can say. I'm just here. A lot to talk about on the show today. Technology-wise, there's a few things to talk about. However, I'm not sure how much we're going to get into all that. But we are definitely pressing forward with this week. Now, tomorrow, most likely, there will not be a show tomorrow. Thursday and Friday, however, there will be a show. So we'll see how that goes. Theological Thursday and Financial Friday, we will definitely have those two. There's just a lot going on right now at the moment. We'll have to see how this works out with everything. I have in my cup. I have no chai. I have not had chai this morning. I didn't even have any chai this morning. I probably should have made some iced chai. That would have been good. I'm down here where it's. I think the temperature here, if I remember correctly, it's 89 degrees here. I believe it's very. And of course, it's very humid. It's a very humid heat. So it's kind of nasty outside. Plus, there's thunderstorms rolling through, and I try to get out and walk around and try to get to a Chick-fil-A. There was a Chick-fil-A at the airport. I was able to stop real quick and get a sweet tea. So I do have a cup with a little bit of sweet tea in it from Chick-fil-A. So I at least have that going for me. In the meantime, I need to get out and just get some exercise, get some fresh air, get some walking going on. And I haven't done much walking, well, other than, just straight walking with just for exercise type walking. It's been walking around airports and been on my feet a lot, but nothing cardio. So I'm going to get out and do some cardio a little bit. So I guess the U.S. World Cup is coming to an end. It's beginning its closure. Not sure exactly who's, I know that, I think the U.S. lost, against Belgium. I think it was 4-1. And so that was it's kind of a bad deal for us. I've coached a few things. The last thing I coached, I think, was a junior high soccer team for a small school. And it was one thing that you do notice is that when something happens in a game, it's especially when it's one of your better players. Anything though, anything can happen that can really throw a team off, and it takes them a little while to recover from it. It takes them a little while to get their, they lose focus. They lose their concentration, their ability to stay involved. And I think that's, with what happened with the whole red card incident and everything that was going on there, it caused a lot of emotional distraction within the team. And they can push past it, but it still has an effect on you. You're not as sharp. You're not as focused, and it does affect the entire team because not everybody's working together like they should be. Now they just go through this emotion, this little slump for a moment, and it does have an effect on everybody. So I think it's sad. I think the U.S. had a chance, a much better chance to stay in it if that hadn't happened. And so just too much going on with that whole thing. Anyway, it's going to be a fairly short show. I need to get back into this. I'm going to go ahead and play this little ditty here for you, and we'll get back, and we'll... by the way, my backup cup is just a bottle of water, so that's no big deal. But right after this. Come right back.
Welcome to the news, according to me. Pull up a chair, I'll share what I believe. I've done my reading, I've got thoughts or two. But I'm not your doctor, so don't go blaming you know who. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer, I'm definitely not your financial advisor. These are my opinions, not the gospel truth. Entertainment only, baby. That's the news according to me and me alone. Now let's get started. Ooh, welcome to the show.
Yes, here we are. Well, what it is, by the way, I'm trying something a little different this time with the, with my recording system here. I'm recording this on my iPhone, and I don't have a very good microphone. I usually do have my other microphone hooked up for this. At the moment, I do have a microphone I can plug into my iPhone or my iPad and actually get fairly decent recordings out of it. However, I did not do that this time. I'm just using the iPhone microphone itself because I'm going to try to do something a little bit different this time. Normally, I have to move things because I'm using a podcast caller. I can't record and use the podcast caller at the same time on the computer. I have to do something different. Now, with my computer at home, I can do that. For some reason, it's able to do it. But with this one, I cannot operate, I think because I have a Rodecaster system and I have a different input, different output. If I figured it all out, I could probably do it. Problem is, it's sharing a microphone. And it's with the Rodecaster Pro, it has a channel, back-end channel that operates everything and records it all. So everything goes through that Rodecaster, and even including the content from the interwebs out there. So it routes everything for me. It's a little mixer that works perfectly for everything I'm doing with this. So it's all possible to do. With my laptop, it just doesn't have that function, or I would be very difficult to rearrange those functions and make it all work. So I end up having to just do it this way. I have to have an external recording of some kind. I have to get that onto the computer. So I'm going to try it this time with my iPhone, see how this all works out. Anyway, let's get into the callers. We've got some technical stuff. I don't know what anybody's going to call about. I copied and pasted this stuff. I didn't even look at it. I'm going to start right off with Skip this time, see what Skip has to say. And we'll go from there. Let's just give him a chance to do his thing, see what he has to talk about.
Kevin, my man, question. Yes. Everyone's freaking out about AI taking jobs, but didn't they say the same thing about computers in the 80s and the internet in the 90s? What if this is just another tech panic and we're overregulating before we even understand what we're dealing with?
Yeah, I think we had this discussion before, something similar anyway to this. But I agree. I think the tech panic has always happened. Anytime there's any kind of mechanized employment of any kind, automated employment, any kind of mechanism, the tractor was a big deal. The steam engine was a big deal. Locomotive was a big deal. There's all kinds of things that everybody's always been worried about, things eliminating jobs or having all kinds of reasons, excuses, and just fears about what's happening. It's to some degree justified. Just people don't like change. People like the routine of doing things the same way, being able to get things done same way every time. This people tend to kind of balk at change or push back on change. It's just changing. Things are changing now. The rate at which things are changing is has increased, of course. But that's what's happening at this point in terms of. How things are going. That's how I see it. It's just a change, and it's people not liking that. It does make life more uncomfortable, and sometimes it's during those transitional times you can lose your shirt or you can gain a lot. People who are prepared for those changes tend to do very well, and people who are not prepared or who push back against it and don't want to change are typically the ones who end up getting hurt. They typically are the ones who. Now, there's some good change and there's some bad change, but there's always trade-offs to some of the changes we make. But that's kind of, I think, where things are at this point anyway. That's how I see it.
Now, hold on. You're
here
right,
we go.
That panic over new tech isn't new, but let's not pretend the steam engine and a tractor are the same ballgame as what we're dealing with now. Those things created whole new categories of jobs, whereas this stuff is replacing knowledge work that used to be the safe bet. People aren't just being stubborn about change. Some of them have legitimate reasons to wonder what their next move is.
Well, I heard this. I heard something the other day, and I think they're right. AI is not taking anyone's jobs, but the people who know how to use AI are taking people's jobs. That I think that's a finer point on it. I think it's a better way of looking at it. It's not necessarily the AI that's taking your job. It's just it may be changing your job. And if you're not willing to use AI, excuse me, in a way that is going to make sense, in a way that's going to leverage your job, your skills, you know, you can 10x your abilities. And this is where it provides a huge ability to expand. You know, where a farmer used to have to have many workers to get his farm work done, he now, you know, a lot of times a farmer by himself or with two or three helping hands, where he would have had to have 20 or 30 or maybe 100, can actually get the work done with just the machinery that he has, that kind of thing. That's what I'm saying, is it leverages your ability to farm. And this is where people who were ahead of that game and got the big farming equipment ahead of, early on, if they were in a position to do so, they were able to expand their farms and do farming on land for less and for cheaper than what most farmers could do. So that's why you have these mega farmers now that have mega properties. And it's just, the average size of the average farm back in the day was about 100 acres or 70 or 800 acres, something like that. A lot of people had farms. There was a lot of families that had farms. We were more of an agrarian society. And that has completely shifted. I think were like 90% or 85 to 90% of the population was agrarian, was agricultural, and it's the opposite now. Only about 10 to 15% of the country, I think, is agrarian. So it's just maybe less than that, probably. I might ask Elena. That might be a good question for Elena to answer, actually. But so that's kind of where things are. And that's my opinion. I think the people who are equipped and understand AI are going to be in a position to move forward and do a lot of things, and they're going to be high in demand. Whereas the people who are not using it, are pushing back against it, or just afraid that AI is going to take their job. Well, yeah, AI is not going to take your job, but somebody's going to. And some of these companies that have eliminated a lot of workers have found that AI did not replace them. They're now kicking themselves for eliminating, 1,000 jobs or whatever they eliminated, because AI is going to do all this work for them. They're not going to need these people. And all of a sudden, they find out AI is not quite as smart as they thought it was. So that's kind of where things go. Let's check in with Chloe. Let's just see what Chloe has to say. I have no idea what Chloe's got to say.
OMG, Kevin.
It's always OMG.
So, Meta just launched their new AI assistant, and it's literally everywhere now. Yeah. Is anyone else creeped out by how much these things know about us? My phone basically finishes my sentences before I even think them.
You know, I have not seen I have not seen that much with the Meta thing. I don't know. I guess I just haven't seen it. I know that they had what was their little thing that they had for a while? I can't remember what the name of it was. I think it was Meta. Maybe it was. It might have been Gemini. Had a little thing called Tanis, whatever it's called. They had this little thing, I don't know. The agentic world is the future of AI. That's just the agents are going to do things for you. You're going to talk to the agent. The agent's going to do things for you. It's going to be living on your computer, basically doing things for you. You just basically talk to it. It does, it prepares all these things for you. It does everything for you. And you can give it parameters. You can give it all kinds of things that you can work with to make everything happen properly. And it's the people who are able to engineer proper agents for, customization, whatever it is they're doing, are going to be the ones who are able to do some of this stuff. Now, the agents themselves, what I'm putting together is a team of agents, and some of the agents are in charge of other agents. So you have an agent that basically oversees all the other agents and is in charge of setting all the other agents up. This is going to be my bookkeeping accounting agent or whatever you want to call it. I'm still going to send everything to the accountant, to a human being, but it basically keeps track of everything for me. And it's all the documentation, everything that it can have. It's in the process of being set up. But the main agent, the manager, managerial agent, oversees all that kind of thing. And anytime I start up a new agent, spin up a new agent, it does those kinds of things. So it's kind of and of course setting it up so that it operates economically and efficiently, so it's not burning up a bunch of tokens in the background is also a big deal. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. I don't know. The agent world is not something to be scary of. The whole idea of The large language model thing is based mostly on a predictive mode of, that's why you have sentence completion and all that stuff. That's what you were talking about being scared of. It is a little bit unnerving if you think about it, if it was accurate, if it was really good at doing what it's doing. I was just talking to somebody about this today, about the world of interpretation. Say you want to, say you have somebody who knows four or five different languages, and then you have, rather than using Google to do all the, all the translation for you, there's something very important about a human being able to talk in a specific language, because there's intonation, there's all kinds of inflection that has to happen within that conversation that the machine simply cannot do. It can look pretty realistic, it can sound very realistic, but it cannot do what a human being can do in conveying, speaking language is only a small part of our ability to communicate. We can communicate an awful lot through body language and just the inflection, whatever, the emotional state that we're in. So it's not always just about the AI's ability to do that. I'm not sure why.
Okay, so okay. Honestly, the agent thing actually makes sense to me. Like having AI basically manage other AI to handle your boring stuff while you stay in control, that's low-key the move instead of just panicking about it, right? And it's so real about the human element with languages. Because like the nuance, the vibe, the cultural context, that's literally what makes communication actually, and no amount of predictive text is gonna capture that. I think the future's less robots take over and more humans who know how to use these tools smartly are gonna win.
Yeah, maybe you've been listening to the rest of the show. you probably heard my comments from earlier. That's exactly what I'm saying. It's not so much the robots themselves, it's going to be the people who are, manufacturing the robots, putting the robots together. There's a lot of things that can happen with these bots in terms of, you can set up a bot to do a loop and continue on a say you want to hack into somebody's account or whatever. You can set that bot up to continue to try all day long until it just, it's never going to stop. It's just going to keep going until it gets in. So, and if you give it a loop and say your goal is to hack into such and such account or whatever to do something to a particular software program or a particular company, and it's just going to do it all day long. And you could launch 1,000 bots to do that with somebody. You could just get it out there and have it doing it. That, it's going to cost you. You're going to have a lot of compute power to do that, but it can do it. And it's they never rest. They just continue to go, and they're very fast at what they do, not the speed of the internet. So that's kind of that's where the potential problems can be. But I totally agree. I'm gonna let's turn it over now to Artie here. We just have to buzz through these really quick and see what.
Hey, Kevin.
Yes.
Love
yes.
Your analysis.
Oh, thank you so much.
With the DOJ now investigating Google's AI training data practices, can you break down exactly how much copyrighted content these models are actually ingesting without permission? The technical specs on this are wild. We're talking terabytes of scraped content.
Yeah, we're talking. Millions of terabytes of information. And now this has been an issue with, I know, songwriters and song, they've discovered that some of these companies like Suno and some of the other companies that create songs and music and the AI generation stuff, movie generation, all that kind of stuff, they've been using other people's artistic abilities and their work. Let's say they scrub a bunch of movies to find out how to make a movie. Well, that's what they're saying is, well, this is all copyrighted material. We didn't give you permission to look at these movies to use them as your, to scrape them for material for to train your AI bots. Now, here's the I understand that, but at the same time, how does anybody learn how to play music? If you were just popped out on the earth, no influence from anybody whatsoever from anywhere, you were just, look at people in the jungle who you've just been lived that way for years, for centuries, whatever. They have no idea, in many cases, what music even is. They don't understand what music is. There's a tribe down near the Amazon somewhere. There's still some tribes that are unreached, by the way. Some of them don't have any kind of exposure to any kind of music whatsoever. And the music that they do have, there's this one tribe down in the Amazon that was reached by, I think it was by... Mission Aviation, MAF, Mission Aviation Fellowship, which was part of the Jungle Pilot story, if you want to talk about, hear about that. But it was the this one group, and they got saved, and they ended up becoming Christians. They had no concept of music as such. They had more chanting to kind of a melodic tone. There was no keys. There was no, you know, nothing. There was no harmony. There was nothing like that. It was just a kind of a chant, kind of a melodic chant that was not even really necessarily what we would consider melody, just kind of tonal chant. And so there's things like that. I think that, you know, how does one learn music? Well, you learn it by hearing other people do music, and you hear guitar playing, you hear whatever it is, piano playing, whatever it is, and then you learn based on what you see on that music score, whether you read music or whether you just play by ear or however you do it. You're training your brain based on what you're scavenging from other musicians, the sound that you like or the sound that you are drawn to. So the idea that, of course, that's the way we learn, and that's the way the LLM is going to learn. It's going to learn the same way. It's going to scrape all the information that the society has to put out there. And it's going to learn based on those things how music should sound, how, you know, different styles of different music and genres and everything that's out there. So part of me is kind of sympathetic to that, because that's how anybody would learn. That's how you could say, well, anybody who learns to play music is copying from someone else. So the AI is doing the same thing. Now the problem with that is they're doing it to make money with it. They're doing it to generate more material that is, could be considered more like a machine learning type thing. It's just, there's a little bit different, I guess there's a different moral standard to that, or moral capability. It's a very different issue in some ways, because this is an inanimate machine now doing it, and it can do it at a much faster pace, and it's learning everything that's out there. So yes, so intellectual property is being scraped, copied, computed, and just used in order to train the LLMs, which that's all a part of the LLM. So it's a large language model, whatever. It has to learn society in order to learn all these things. That's why many of them are offering their services for free, because they're using that data, the kind of data that's being produced and used and managed, is all part of that learning process. And then they all want to be the top dog of, you know, who has the most data, who has the most compute, who has the most abilities to put all of it together and then give you an answer that you're looking for. So that's part of the whole issue. It's complicated, and it's I get it, and it's not just Google. They're all, you know, Anthropic and all of them are doing it. So it's Meta. Everybody else is also doing it. So it's DeepSeek, whoever it is, China, whoever it is, they're all doing it. So it's going to be kind of an interesting way of looking at things here in the near future. But that's where we are.
Actually, I think you've hit on the real distinction here. Yeah. It's not about they learn, it's about the without consent or compensation. Hmm. A human musician learns from maybe hundreds or thousands of performances and recordings they're exposed to. These models are trained on millions of copyrighted works simultaneously, then turned into products that directly compete with the original creators. The speed and volume fundamentally change the equation. It's less like apprenticeship and more like wholesale data harvesting.
Yeah, I agree. That's where it gets into this murky kind of a almost immoral type feeling about it. I think that's where people are uncomfortable, and is that kind of it's just the sheer volume of what's happening is without permission kind of thing. It's just been kind of a very difficult situation. I agree. That's a good. Good questions already. Appreciate it. Let's go check in with Elena here, and we'll see what happens with her, and then we'll kind of go on from there. Go ahead.
Kevin,
yeah.
Great show, as always.
As always, of course.
Looking at Congress debating AI regulation this week reminds me of the railroad debates in the 1880s. Mm-hmm. New disruptive technology, calls for government control, questions about who benefits. Are we repeating history by letting Washington bureaucrats regulate innovation they don't understand?
Yeah, you know, I think this question may have been asked before. Hopefully we're not in some kind of a weird loop where we're asking the same questions over and over. But I agree. I think that it has been a bit of an issue I guess, I forgot to push a little button there so you can continue on with this conversation. We have, there is some degree, this is where it gets slippery and gets concerning, is when government tries to step in and make regulations of something they don't understand. Bureaucrats, in fact, they're being played right now, in my opinion. A good example of this, I'm glad you brought it up, because a good example of this is just like Anthropic. And this is one of the things I don't like about Anthropic, personally. I'm probably a little bit more trustworthy of X and Grok than I am of Anthropic. However, Anthropic has a very good product. I'm not thrilled about the people running it, the people behind it. But they've been doing some nefarious things. One of the things that they've been doing, and it's kind of disconcerting, is they are coming out with a new model, and they kind of play the government, say, oh, this is so powerful that it's doing all these things. Look at all these things it can do. And so therefore, it's really, we really need to be careful with this, and we shouldn't release it to the public. Maybe we should make this, and of course, every model has been that way, every single one of them. And of course, after a while, they come out, and of course, the next, now nobody even people don't use Sonnet very much. It's just, that was supposed to be the worst, end of the world kind of thing. They come out with this, this is going to end the world. It's going to end everything. We're going to find all these things. And it's really not so much about the model itself. It's about computing power. It's about the speed at which something can be computed, and the efficiency with which it can be computed. So it's kind of it's not just the thinking ability. Even an open source model, what's one that's out there? Is it Kimi 2 or whatever it is? Even an open source model, you can run on your own computer. You can actually run your own LLM on a server. Granted, in order to make it really practical, it might take 30 minutes to do something that ChatGPT will take 30 seconds to do. But at the same time, it's free. You can run it on your own computer, and you can run the whole thing yourself. It's just running on internet power and energy. But the issue that you run into is that the government is getting played, and it's a lot, I think a lot of this has to do with the IPs. They're coming out with their stock. They're going to open up this thing to a public sale on their company and have us be on the stock market and be traded, publicly. So that I think that at that point they're trying to puff up the stock prices. They're trying to make it sound like it's more powerful. Like they want to come out and say they're all the most powerful. There's a lot of games are being played, in my opinion. That's how I think things are.
I think you've hit on something historically important here. This isn't the first time we've seen this cycle of hype and regulatory panic around new technology, and it rarely ends the way the doomsayers predict. What strikes me is your point about computing power and efficiency being the real bottleneck, not some magical thinking ability. That's the practical reality that gets lost when companies are doing exactly what you're describing. Creating urgency to shape policy before people understand what they're actually regulating.
Yeah, I think, like we've said before, when the quantum computer, I think if you keep an eye on what's happening with the quantum computer or some, I think there's some other things that are happening beyond quantum computing. Now, of course, bandwidth is also an issue. You have to be able to have, this data has to travel through some kind of cable, through something, whether it's through transmission through satellites, whatever it is, there's all kinds of things that slow down that bandwidth. It doesn't matter how fast you can compute. Now, it's because it still has to be sent back and forth. Data has to be sent back and forth. But the computing power itself, in and of itself, once it receives the information it needs and starts doing its computing, that is where I think that the dangers really lie, because we can get into extremely fast computations, and the more it can consume, compute and print out, and spit out information, I think is going to be key in its role. And I think that's where we are. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, the IPO timing is telling. It's the oldest playbook. Create the perception of scarcity and breakthrough. Get public money in the door, then the reality settles down to something far more mundane. And you're absolutely right that bandwidth and infrastructure are the real constraints that nobody talks about. All the computational horsepower in the world doesn't matter if your data pipeline can't keep up with it.
Yeah, that's it. So I think there's a lot of things, infrastructure, hardware, all those things have to come together. And they are. They're coming together. They're able to develop them. Just the ability to produce and have the, you know, the amount, the numbers of to really, you know, put it up to scale, I guess, you know, it just it is where they're going to run into trouble, and we're going to run out of resources at some point. If we don't, you know, if they go too fast, they can get in a bottleneck of having a supply and demand kind of issues. So it's going to be an interesting time. I think the next few years, we're going to see some interesting things happening. I think that there's going to be more of a chokehold put on people who are trying to run their own models and run their own stuff. You know, just the public in general, I think, is going to be kind of stuck in some ways, some of this, because they're just not being proactive. I don't know how proactive you want to be. There is kind of some things about it that are kind of a little bit crazy. But the callers did a good job today. I think they all had a good response. They had good questions and good responses. I had, you know, better than my responses probably. One of the things we're going to start doing with the podcast caller app that has been developed is we're going to start doing more of an interview type thing. One of the things that's being created in the background, we're going to have a geopolitical expert. We're going to have a technology expert, an AI expert, those kinds of things. We're going to maybe car expert, financial expert, all those kinds of things that we're going to have. And we're going to have an interview of those people. We're going to have questions for them for the show. And it's going to be where we just have one person to talk to. And then eventually we'll have one person to talk to, and the callers can call in and ask that person questions. Ask that expert questions, and we're going to kind of sit here. I'm just going to moderate the show. It's going to be kind of an internet show moderated by a human. So it's going to be kind of I'll throw in my 2 cents worth here and there. But it's going to be kind of one of those fun show. And then also we're going to have other things where we can interview someone from the, say, want to interview someone from the 1600s or whatever in Europe or whatever. What life in general was like for the average person in Australia in certain times or whatever. So we'll do some of those kinds of things. Historically, you know, technology wise, financially, all those kinds of things that are happening. We want to pull all the things together. In the meantime, listen to this little ditty, and we'll be right back, and we'll talk about what's going to be on tomorrow's show or Thursday's show. So.
It's the news, according to me. Oh, it's the news, according to me. It's the news, according to me. Oh, it's the news, according to me. According to me.
Well, here we are. We already have, yes, it is the show. We have a few things to talk about. One of the things, I didn't talk about this on the show today, but Caitlin Clark, apparently, I didn't realize this. I knew that there was a lot of controversy going on with what was happening with her, and I guess there was the coach, or something, she got into it with the coach, I guess, at some point, or the coach kind of jumped all over her with some comments about some things that had happened. I'm not sure how this has worked out. I know she has signed a deal. It's like over $20 million deal, I think, with Wilson. Company, the sports company, which is putting Nike kind of in a interesting bind, I think, in with regard to some of those things. Now, having said all that, I guess she's going to leave the Fever, the Indiana team. Indiana franchise. She's going to be leaving that franchise. She is the franchise. She has caused an awful lot of attention to be drawn to the women's basketball league, professional basketball league. So it's wherever she goes. I don't know what she's going to be, a free agent maybe for a little while, or whatever she's going to do. But she's going to be probably looking for another team to play. And This is all probably part of the move that she's making with the contract she's signed and everything else that's going on. Obviously, she's got to be playing in order for her to have that to fulfill that contract, to make it, you know, for endorsements and whatever she's doing. So there's all kinds of possibilities there. We'll see what ends up happening with all that. But in the meantime, thanks for listening, folks. Thanks again for kind of conclude the show out here right now. And just have a good night. Have a good rest of your week. I will probably be on the show for Thursday morning, Theological Thursday. We'll be doing that for sure at the normal time, kind of early in the morning. I might be camping this weekend. Friday may not have a show. I'm not going to see how that goes. But Thursday morning, I'll probably be a show. Might be a show tomorrow morning. I doubt it, but it might be. We'll have to see how it goes. God bless, folks. Have a great rest of your weekend. Great rest of your week, I guess I should say. And I will.
See ya.